In recent years, our military has become much more aware of and concerned about the long-term effects of military personnel being in intense wartime situations. They are particularly concerned with battle fatigue, or as it is so called today, post-traumatic stress syndrome. Battle fatigue or post-traumatic stress syndrome is a psychological disorder that develops in some individuals who have had major traumatic experiences like a serious accident or exposure to the horrors of war. The soldier who lives under the constant tension and threat of conflict and danger, who is in close contact with people that have died or have been seriously injured, who perhaps have witnessed the atrocities of a war against the civilian population, who experience anxiety over being away from family and friends, they over time develop a difficulty in processing life. Their reaction to danger is slow, as does their thinking. They struggle with initiating and prioritizing routine tasks, preoccupied with minor issues. They lack concentration and initiative. Their passion is gone. And so people with post-traumatic stress syndrome have symptoms of depression, excessive irritability, guilt for perhaps having survived when their buddies died, recurrent nightmares, flashbacks to the traumatic scene, and an overreaction to sudden noise. Those who suffer lose their passion for life. They're worn out from the battle. Battle fatigue. It's not only a problem of those who serve our country and our military, but it can be a problem for those of us who serve the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords in the spiritual battle. For we who know Jesus Christ as our Savior and who minister and serve others, we are involved in a spiritual war. The battle is not with our unsaved friends. It's not with our unsaved neighbors. It's not with people in the community. But Paul says that our battle, it says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. We find ourselves in the midst of a cosmic spiritual conflict between God and Satan, good and evil, and when involved in sharing the gospel or ministering to others, we are engaging in spiritual conflict, fighting the forces of darkness. And to be successful, we need to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. We need to put on the whole armor of God so that we won't be able to stand in that day of battle. We need God's power. We need God's protection so that we do not become a casualty of war. We need to be constantly strengthened by God in the inner man. For every time we minister to others, power proceeds from us. There's a drain that comes. Jesus felt it. On his way to Jairus' house to raise his daughter from the dead, Jesus is touched by a woman who has been subject to bleeding for 12 years. And when she touched him, Luke 8:44 says that immediately her bleeding stopped. And when Jesus asked those around him, "Who touched me?" Peter replied, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you," to which Jesus replied, "Someone touched me, for I perceived power going out from me." He was aware of the drain. There is a spiritual drain in ministry that when he healed others, when he ministered to others, when he gave out to others, there was a drain of spiritual and physical energy. May I say the same is true of you and I. We have just finished an intense week of spiritual battle. Preparation for this past week began last year after VBS, but our main focus really began the early part of the year when the VBS committee was formed and we started planning for this past week. A lot of hard work, a lot of long hours have gone into preparing for 1 week of ministry. I know there were some of you who met on Tuesday evenings to prepare props and other things and for our VBS. 2 weeks ago, there were long hours and lots of energy was spent in transforming the building into the Sun Sparks Lab. And each of the rooms were decorated downstairs to enhance the learning experience of the students. There were craft materials that were collected, crafts put together ahead of time. I cannot begin to state all the work that went into this year's VBS. On top of this, some of you work full-time jobs. So whatever preparation had to be done was done in your spare time on top of your regular responsibilities. Many of us have family responsibilities which we had to handle. Some of us had loved ones who were sick. Some were in the hospital. Some even had surgery during this time. And so there were a lot of things that were going on. There were little problems as well. I call them nuisance problems that crop up every year. One of our air conditioner compressors for the auditorium decided to quit the week before VBS. And the hard drive back in the sound room that runs the PowerPoint, that died last Sunday. So we had a lot of things going on. All of this reminds us that we are involved in a spiritual battle with unseen forces. And then this past week, here at the church, ministering every night from 5:30, 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night. Some of you again work during the day and came at night right from work. Every night the gospel was shared. 70 children, including over 20 teens, were here. It was a great week, one of the best I think we've had. Total of 9 made commitments of their lives to Christ. Certainly there was joy in heaven. Not only heaven, but here on earth. Because God graciously worked in a mighty way, demonstrating his saving power, and we praise God this morning for all that he did this past week. But make no mistake about it, it was a week of intense spiritual warfare. Now, I would dare say that our initial feelings of excitement and enthusiasm has given way to feelings of being drained physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I would ask for a show of hands of how many of you are tired this morning, but I think probably all of us would raise our hands. We're tired. You know, prolonged exposure to spiritual battle without relief can lead to spiritual battle fatigue, where we experience not only exhaustion, but it can lead to depression, loss of motivation, painful thinking, a loss of one's spiritual passion. Some of you may be thinking about quitting, or perhaps not doing this again next year. None of us have developed immunity to spiritual battle fatigue. It can happen to anyone. In fact, it happened to one who the Jews considered to be the greatest of all the prophets. For it happened to Elijah. Now, if I can just give you the background to 1 Kings chapter 19. Elijah has just experienced a bad case of spiritual battle fatigue. He has just come off a great mountaintop experience of cosmic spiritual conflict. For according to 1 Kings chapter 18, he participated in the challenge of the gods. It was between Baal, the god of the Sidonians, whom the nation of Israel was worshiping at the time, and Jehovah or Yahweh, the true and living God of Israel, whom the nation had forsaken. The challenge was simple. Both Elijah and the prophets of Baal would build an altar to their God. On the altar they would lay the wood, they would cut the sacrifice, and the God who would answer by fire would be the true God, the one whom Israel would worship. Now, the prophets of Baal thought this was going to be a cinch. This was actually playing right into their hand, because Baal was the pagan god of fire. And so in their minds, they thought he had an advantage over Jehovah. They built their altar. They put their sacrifice on the altar. They began to cry out to Baal. Baal, hear us. Come and send your fire. Nothing happened. So they got up on the altar and started to dance around on top of it. They cut themselves, thinking that perhaps if he saw a little bit of blood, he would answer. And nothing happened. Nothing happened. There was no answer from Baal. Elijah takes his rocks and he rebuilds the altar of the Lord. He lays the sacrifices on the wood. He drowns it with water. He actually says, go fill some pitchers. Go fill some skins with water. And he poured the water so that it was all over the altar. It was all around the altar. There was a trench built. It was running over. Completely soaked. And he prays a very simple prayer, and fire falls from heaven. And it devours everything, including the stones of the altar. The prophets of Baal were then seized by the people, and they were slain. Jehovah God, the God of Elijah, he would be their God. It was a great day of victory for Jehovah and for Elijah, a lousy day for Baal, his prophet. And a lady, I use that term very loosely, by the name of Jezebel. Now, God had proven that he was a God that could come through. Not only did God prove that he was the God through the fire that fell from heaven, but also through the rains that came. For earlier, according to 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 1, Elijah had said to Ahab the king, as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. There had been a drought, no rain. James 5:17 reveals that it had not rained for 3.5 years. And yet on that day, after the defeat of Baal and the destruction of the prophets of Baal, at the request of Elijah in response to his prayers, God sends the rain. So it's a double victory for Elijah. A great day of spiritual conquest and turning the nation back to the Lord. It was a day of revival. For people were prostrating themselves before God. They were bowing before him and saying, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Now you would think that Elijah would be elated after such a great victory, such a show of power by God. But instead, in 1 Kings chapter 19, we find Elijah under a broom tree, suffering from depression, wanting to die. Whatever spiritual energy he had had has now dissipated. Now what happened? What spoiled the party? Well, we find out in 1 Kings chapter 19, beginning at verse 1. It says, and Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. Jezebel, when she heard about Elijah, what he did to the 450 prophets of Baal, she sent word to Elijah simply saying, Elijah, you're dead meat. I'm going to get you. I'm coming to get you. You're going to die. Now you would think that Elijah, having just defeated 450 prophets of Baal, would have sent back a text message or an email to her saying something like this, come and get me. Here I am, come and get me. I'll be waiting for you. The one who just called on God to send the rain and the rains fell. The one who called on God to send fire from heaven and fire fell. You would think that he would have been full of faith, trusting God to take care of him in this situation. But look what happens instead. Verse 3. It says, when he saw that, he rose and ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die. And he said, "It is enough now, Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's." Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." He's worn out. He's worn out from the battle. He has no strength left to stand and fight, so he runs for his life and seeks to hide from Jezebel. Now, people who are exhausted from spiritual battle exhibit certain characteristics of depression. And I find in our text at least 5 telltale signs that Elijah's depressed and that his spiritual energy is depleted. The first is that there's a fear of the future. A fear of the future. He runs for his life from Jezebel. He's afraid of what's going to happen. And out of fear, he acts. He no longer is acting rashly, but instinctively. He's afraid and he runs and hides. Now, in a milder case, it may be the feeling of having nothing to look forward to for some time. You know, as I look at the end, we're at the end of July right now. August 1st is tomorrow. That's hard to believe, isn't it? Where has the summer gone?
Away.
It's gone away. That's right. And it's going quickly. My wife is going to soon be back at school again. I'll lose my summer wife and have my school wife back again. And got 2 wives. I like my summer wife when she's home with me and we have time together. You know, when you're looking at it, you know, thinking summer's over. Perhaps you have 10 or 11 months until your next vacation. You're facing things in life. You don't know what's going to happen. There's things out there. And it's easy for us to panic. It's easy for us to panic when we think of what might lie ahead. That's part of the blues. There's a fear of the future. And when physically and spiritually tired, we respond out of fear rather than faith. Secondly, there is a desire to be alone. A desire to be alone. Elijah leaves behind his servant. And he goes a full day's journey into the desert, the most barren place, because he wanted to be alone. The last thing most those who are spiritually exhausted want to be around are people. You know, there are times when we become peopled out. We just don't want anybody around. That was Elijah. And so the last thing they do is want to run into people that they know who might dump on them with more problems that they have. And so they retreat. Now, I know some of us or some of you are more people-oriented than others. Some thrive with having people, being surrounded by people. But even the most people-oriented person occasionally needs some time to be alone. I'm reminded of the fact that Jesus, on occasion, would withdraw himself to a deserted place to be alone with his Father. You know, so if Jesus did it, so do us. So we need it as well. And so other of us, though, need more time alone. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily depressed or blue. It's just part of our personality. But a sign of a depression is when someone who's normally outgoing, loves to be with people, withdraws and retreats for an extended period of time. And so there is a fear of the future, a desire to be alone. There is, thirdly, suicidal thoughts. Because he says, "Lord, I've had enough. Take me home. Please take me home. I want to die." Now those words kind of radiate hopelessness. Painful words that come from someone who does not see a bright future, sees no way out of the present circumstances except through death. And according to experts, depression is the leading cause in suicide. In fact, about 15% of those who are seriously depressed will eventually commit suicide. And may I say to you, take all threats of suicide seriously. They point to a hurting person, someone who needs help and is seeking help. Most suicide threats, thankfully, are just that. In fact, even if Elijah here, his threat or desire to die is simply that of a threat. Because if Elijah really wanted to die, Jezebel would have gladly accommodated him. But the fact that he ran for his life reveals that he was really trying to save his life, not lose it. but suicidal thoughts. Fourthly, there's self-pity and poor self-image. Look at verse 4. He says, he prays, "It's enough now, Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my fathers." I'm no better than my fathers. Translated in our vernacular, I'm no good, I'm of no use, I'm worthless, I'm just like everybody else. And then there is, fifthly, physical tiredness. Because he says in verse 5 that he laid down and slept under a broom tree. Physically tired. You know, people with the blues, even after 8 hours of sleep, may get up feeling as tired as when they went to bed. Life to them becomes a chore. Motivation is at an all-time low to do anything other than lay in bed. Whatever spiritual energy Elijah had on Mount Carmel is now gone as he's sitting under a broom tree in the middle of the wilderness. He's tired. He's weary. He's longing for death. He's full of self-pity. He's given out. He's exerted his energy in the spiritual fight with Jezebel and the prophets of Baal. Now his passion is depleted. So the question is there any hope for Elijah? What can be done for this battle-weary warrior? Well, we are very fortunate in that the Spirit of God has recorded for us a very private counseling session between Elijah and the master therapist, God himself. And we can learn from the master therapist how to treat spiritual post-traumatic stress. What should we do if we're battle fatigued, exhausted after a particular hard time of ministry, in order to restore our passion to serve again? May I say, first of all, we need some rest and relaxation. Take a little bit of R&R. Take care of the physical. Look at verse 5. It says, "Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.' Then he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked of coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back the second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you.' So he arose and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God." Now, I would certainly like to get a hold of some of that food. You can go 40 days and 40 nights on a couple meals. That would be great, wouldn't it? But you know, here, it doesn't sound too spiritual, does it? Most of us would expect God, to, first of all, would give Elijah a good lecture on how that he is to be joyful at all times in spite of his circumstances. But amazingly, God never gives Elijah the lecture that we would love to give him. Instead, God tucks Elijah into bed. He says, "You need some rest. You need some rest." See, there is a connection between the physical and the spiritual. Some depression can be traced back to physical exhaustion, a lack of proper rest. God's designed our bodies to function on between 7 and 9 hours of sleep. And when we get less than that, we're under stress, we need more sleep to be able to deal with life. One psychologist prescribes 12 hours of sleep for a depressed person before he will see them in the office. Proper sleep. And not just proper sleep, but proper nutrition. Our diets affect our ability to cope with life. Note that the angel of God cooked supper for Elijah twice and urged him to get up and eat. See, the tendency when we're blue is not to either not eat or to eat the wrong kinds of foods. We like comfort foods, those that are usually high calorie, low nutrition. We're drawn to sugars, candy, cakes, pies, cookies and chocolate. For that sugar that will give us that temporary high. But there's the temporary high is followed by the sugar blues. We load up on caffeinated beverages, colas, coffees, teas to give us that temporary lift to keep us awake and so that we and to let us get by with less sleep. But after a while, those temporary lifts no longer work, leaving us feeling more exhausted. What we need is just proper food and a good night's rest to beat the blues. And so I would say, and so God says, take care of the physical first. Without going into details, our bodies are marvelous creations by God with a delicate balance of chemicals that can affect our moods. There's a whole list of physical conditions that can cause depression. And so I encourage anyone who is suffering from depression to see their family doctor for a physical and a full blood analysis first to rule out any physical cause of it. But then to take time to rest. You may have noticed that our church calendar is very light for the month of August. Not much is going on around here except worship on Sundays and our church picnic on August the 21st. There's a few committees that meet, but nothing much else is happening. This is by design. See, we understand that how taxing VBS can be. It's kind of like at the end of our ministry year. And not just VBS, but all of the church programs that we have. We're a small church, which means that most of us are involved in just about everything that goes on around here. And so August is our month to slow down, to relax, to get some extra rest, to spend time with our families, to take vacations, to be renewed and rejuvenated so that we are ready for the full fall ministry. So I want to encourage you to enjoy this month of rest. September's coming. Now the great physician examined Elijah and prescribed plenty of rest and good hot nutritional meals. That was the first weapon in recovering from battle fatigue. Secondly, if possible, I would encourage you to take a short spiritual retreat in order to spend time communicating with God. Look at verse 9. It said, and there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? So he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenants, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. Then he said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore in the mountain and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. So it was when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword, and I am left, and they seek, I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. Now Mount Horeb is another name for Mount Sinai. And while there, God comes seeking Elijah. I think that's very comforting, isn't it? When we're hurting the most, when we are feeling the most neglected, the lowest, God seeks us out. He desires to communicate with us. And Elijah pours out his heart. He's very honest with God about the way he's feeling. He tells it exactly as he sees it and how he feels. He feels as if he's got the short end of the stick. He's been faithful to God. He's been very zealous for God's work. But he can't tell it from the results that he sees. What he sees is that the Israelites have rejected the covenant. They've put to death God's prophets. Now they're coming after him. And so he's worked hard but has made little progress, and he's all alone. He's the only one left. And the underlying theme of his prayer is that even God has somehow abandoned him. He seems to be saying, God, I need to see some action. I need to see some results. I need to see, show me some proof, some your power to reassure me of your presence. I need to know that you're still with me. And God responds in verses 11 through 14 with a demonstration of his presence. A demonstration just for Elijah. But I want us to note that God was not in the spectacular. God was not in the great and powerful wind, nor was he in the earthquake, nor in the roaring fire. God was not in the spectacular, but he was in the gentle whisper, the still, small, silent voice. You know, many times when you and I are experiencing exhaustion, when we're physically exhausted, we think to ourselves of what we need right now is some miracle from God. We need God to demonstrate to us that he's not forsaken us, that God still cares. And so we look for God to do the spectacular, for God to suddenly drop a couple $100,000 into our laps. Maybe not that much, but you know, extra 100 or two would be great. Or for God to bring another person, a new friend, suddenly into our lives, or for God to miraculously open a new job opportunity that solves our unemployment problems, or for God to miraculously change our spouse into a loving, gentle, considerate person that we've always dreamed they would be. See, we look for God to do the spectacular. We desire another and another Mount Carmel experience where God answers by fire or sends the rain in response to our prayers. And all along, God desires to speak to us in the gentle whisper of his Spirit through the Word. And he's whispering to us all the time, I will never leave you nor forsake you. You are my child. You're my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. Trust me. Trust me. Now, why does God choose the gentle whisper to reveal his presence instead of the spectacular? It's to reveal that he is always with us. The earthquakes, the mighty winds, the torrential rains, the Mount Carmel-like experiences when God answers by fire, the spectacular, they may come at times. God certainly can produce miracles. He can perform miracles today, but miracles were never meant to be common occurrences. Part of the definition of a miracle is that it's an unusual happening, something out of the ordinary. But God chooses the gentle breeze, the whisper of the wind to demonstrate his presence. For we have the gentle breeze with us at all times. My friends, if you are spiritually exhausted, I would encourage you to carve out some time to get alone with God, to cry out to God, to tell him exactly how you feel. God has big enough shoulders to handle it. Listen to God's reassurance from his written word. Assurances that we're not in this alone, that he is always with us, never leaving us nor forsaking us. I'm reminded of Isaiah's words when he says, those they who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. So if you find that you are spiritually exhausted, first of all, take care of the physical. Proper rest and diet. Then get alone with God. Take a mini retreat, if possible, to spend time communicating with God in prayer, where you can pour out your heart, listening for his words of reassurance. Then, thirdly, we need to replace faulty, painful thinking with the truth. Look at verse 15. It says, then the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king of Syria, and you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Mehalo, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all of whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. Now in this chapter, there's been a lot of faulty thinking, painful thinking, going on in Elijah's head. Thoughts about his worth. He says, I'm no better than my fathers. Thoughts about death. He says, oh Lord, take my life. He was thinking about whether all that he had done in this past is worth it. Because he's done all these things and he's the only one left. Has all this expenditure of time and energy and effort standing for God been worth it? He talks about his friends or those who were friends or the lack of friends. He's the only one left. Nobody cares. God, I have no friends. Now these are very painful thoughts. And people have these kind of thoughts when they're depressed. But the truth is, every one of them is faulty. Elijah was thinking that God was finished with him, that it was over, that this was nothing more. And yet God says, I still have plans for your life. I still have work for you. In fact, the most significant work of your career still lies ahead. For I want you to anoint Hazael to be the king of Aram. I want you to anoint Jehu to be the king over Israel. And to anoint Elisha to succeed you as a prophet. And Elijah was thinking that he was the only one left, but God says to him in verse 18, oh, by the way, I have 7,000 in Israel who have not bowed the knee to Baal. You're not the only one. See, God challenges Elijah's faulty thinking, painful thinking with the truth, because it's the truth that sets us free. It's the truth that sets us free. It's the truth that rehabilitates and rejuvenates, that restores and recharges our spiritual batteries. Sometimes we need a third-party counselor like Elijah did to point out the truth. At other times we know the truth, but we have to tell ourselves the truth. Our adversary Satan, the master liar, seeks to deceive us so that we continue to believe the lies that we tell ourselves rather than exposing them and replacing them with the truth. For he knows that as we expose and replace the faulty, painful thinking with the truth, we're going to experience in our inner being liberating joy and peace. I'm reminded of Paul's counsel to those that were overwhelmed, anxiety-ridden Christians at Philippi who were weary from the work. He writes, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. These are the things we should think about. This is a great list to occupy our minds. Replace painful thinking with the truth. And when we do, the God of peace will be with us. So take care of the physical first. Have a long talk with God, for he is listening. Thirdly, expose and challenge painful thinking with the truth. And lastly, return to activity as soon as possible. You see, in dealing with battle fatigue today, the U.S. government military has developed and adopted what they call the BICEPS principle, B-I-C-E-P-S. The B stands for brevity, I for immediacy, C for centrality, E for expectancy, P for proximity, and S for simplicity. To put it into more general terms and maybe easier to understand, a soldier that's showing signs of battle fatigue is immediately removed from the place of conflict for a brief period of rest and relaxation with the expectation that they would return to action as soon as possible. In other words, when you fall off the horse, you got to get back on and ride again. And that's what God's saying to Elijah. You need to get back on the horse. Now, God expects Elijah to return to action as soon as possible. For God had work for him to do. Now, note that it was new work. It was something new, a new mission, a new purpose for living. God says, I need you. I got to anoint Hazael to be the king over Aram, Jehu to be the king over Israel. I need you to find your eventual replacement, Elisha, and begin to train him to be my next prophet in Israel. Elijah, you go, you return, and when you arrive, you better get busy. Now, for you and I, who may be feeling a little bit worn today, God's saying the same thing. Work may be the last thing that we really want to think about, but it's maybe the most needful. God is saying that after we've had time to rest and spend time with Him, return to normal activities, return to the work that I have given you to do. For some, this may be returning to the place of employment and continue to work at the same job you've been for the last 20 years. It may mean cooking, cleaning dishes and laundry, whatever, taking care of your family, but you do so with the refreshment and with renewed awareness of God's presence and with a restored passion to serve God. It may mean returning to teaching Sunday school, helping in the nursery, involved in His Kids on Wednesday night, singing in the choir, being involved with praise and worship team, getting involved in the life and work of this church. For others, God may be redirecting to a different avenue of work. What you're doing right now no longer motivates you, and you've lost the passion, and every day is a pure drudgery. Doesn't matter how much sleep you get, how much time you spend communing with God in prayer or in His Word, doesn't matter how many lies of Satan you have encountered, you still lack the passion that you once did. And what you may need is a new sense of mission. A new sense of purpose, new direction from God. See, after going through God's therapy program for battle fatigue, Elijah found that life was not as bad as what he thought. His future was not as dim as he had envisioned. His inner joy and peace returned. His zest for life came back. He continued to faithfully and passionately serve God right up until the moment when God literally took him to heaven in a chariot of fire. Now, perhaps you today are a little bit battle-worn from VBS. VBS, battle fatigue. You're physically, emotionally, and spiritually tired. You might be questioning whether you want to do this again next year because you feel overwhelmed with everything. You're feeling a little bit blue. And see, there is always a major letdown after something great happens. It's a natural thing. So you may be feeling a little bit of that today. May I encourage you today to take a break. A little R&R. Make sure that you're getting adequate sleep and nutrition. In the month of August, carve out time to get alone with God, perhaps more than you normally do for your devotions. When I taught the Navigator 2-7 series discipleship group out in Pontiac, the Navigators advocated periodically taking a half day and devoting it to reading God's Word, to prayer, and to journaling. The way of renewing our passion. And when you do, you can tell God exactly how you feel. And then open your eyes and ears to hear His presence. He's there. He wants to communicate to you and encourage you. May I encourage all of us to replace our faulty thinking with God's truth. Challenge the lies that we might be telling ourselves with the truth that comes from God. And then, let's get back to work in September. September is the beginning of our church year. All the programs begin up again. But may we return to the battle with renewed confidence and passion and with a new sense of peace and joy that comes from serving God.